So klingt Weihnachten bei Rewe. Jetzt festlich sparen bei deinem Weihnachtseinkauf. Diese Woche bei Rewe. Frische Netzsekt, verschiedene Sorten, je 0,75 Liter Flasche nur 3,49 Euro. Und außerdem Emira Klettscheiben, Natur, je 200 Gramm Packung nur 2,22 Euro. Sichere dir außerdem bis zum 24. Dezember 10% Rewe Bonusguthaben auf Weihnachtssüßwaren. Nur in deiner Rewe-App. Frohe Weihnachten. Festlich sparen bei Rewe. Dein Markt.
The Axe of the Blood God.
Welcome to another episode of Axe of the Blood God, US Gamer's official RPG podcast. I'm your host, Kat Bailey. With me today, as always, is my lovely co-host, Nadia Oxford.
Hello, everybody.
And as usual, we're going to talk about RPGs, big and small, Western, Eastern. We love them all so very much. PC, console, doesn't even matter. We'll talk about them. And this week, I mean, we have a fair amount to cover. We're going to talk about Fire Emblem Shadows of Valentia, which is, I have the review copy in my hot little hands right now. Not literally, but I've been playing through that. I had some initial thoughts that I posted on the site earlier this week. I mostly want to talk about how different it is, because it is a lot, like, it's even more different than I was expecting, Nadia. Like,
yeah, so I'm hearing.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was, it's one thing to know. It's another thing to actually play it and be like, oh, okay, yeah, no, that's totally, okay, this is a very different game. We're also going to talk about Skyrim and how it is not the best RPG of all time.
Yeah, we're going to be covering that, all right.
Because two lists came out from Game Informer and from IGN of just recently, highlighting their top 100 RPGs, and the Blood God, of course, very interested in all of this. He wants to know a bit more. The Blood God loves lists, and he loves RPG lists especially.
The Blood God eats them.
But maybe the Blood God's, his blood was boiling a little bit when he saw that Game Informer put Skyrim at the very top. What?
That was a very interesting choice, and we'll definitely be covering that in detail.
And finally, we will be meeting our brand new addition to the US Gamer family, Matt Kim.
Hooray!
Let's get started with the game that is coming out next week. It's been flying under the radar a tiny bit compared to a lot of other games, mostly because the spotlight's still kind of on the Nintendo Switch. But rather than the 3DS, which, let's be honest, like, contrary to what Nintendo was saying, like, that system is kind of it's winding down. It's on its
At least it's going out on a really good note, like that Nintendo 2DS XL is supposedly, according to Mike, like, just really handsome.
Yeah, you know, if the 2DS, the 2DS XL, if it actually improved the screen quality, I would totally consider getting it.
But it doesn't, does it? It's just the same.
Yeah, it looks pretty much the same in terms of the screen, in which case, no sale. but, like, the ergonomics look phenomenal.
Oh, yeah, it's just like, it reminds me of an ice cream sandwich.
Let me tell you, if a system has a better screen, I will always buy it. Because, like, I'm just a sucker for, like, a really nice crystal clear display.
Nice sharp image.
I remember when I bought a Nintendo DS back in the day, like a DS Lite, I remember turning it on for the first time and almost being blinded by how much brighter and better looking it was than the DS. Like, it was a game changer for me. The same went actually for the 3DS XL, which a lot of people were like, well, it's not as good as the screen is, like, blurrier and bigger, but it didn't matter. Like, the system was such an improvement over the launch 3DS that I was like, okay, now I can play this thing now.
So I guess you weren't an early adopter for the Game Boy Advance then.
I mean, I was. I bought one at launch, actually.
Oh, okay.
And I regretted it horribly.
I bet.
Because there were no good games for the thing, right? I mean, they had, what, Castlevania Circle of the Moon?
Which you couldn't see because the screen sucked.
Yeah, exactly. And it had the Mario 2 remake. Mario 2, which I've come around to Mario 2, but at the time, Mario 2, I mean, come on. And then, so yeah, like, for a long time, I was just like, no, no. But then I got an SP, and I was like, yes.
Yeah, SP is a really cute system. I still love the SP.
I even got the new SP, the one that came out at the very end of its lifespan, because it was, the screen was so much brighter than the regular SP. It was amazing. Like, that was the final form of the GBA. I still got it too. Like, I still, when I, it's actually kind of still nice to break out my GB, break it out occasionally and play a GBA game on it.
One of my favorite like handhelds that is overlooked is the Game Boy Color. I played Dragon Warrior 3 on that one. It had a great adaptation of Dragon Warrior 3, and it's, I just love it. It was purple. I still have, I think it's probably somewhere around here, but yeah, in fact, I'm looking at it right now. It's clear, one of those clear see-through purple ones.
Indeed. All right, so Shadows of Valentia, getting back to it, is a remake of Fire Emblem Gaiden, as we've discussed previously on this podcast, which came out on the NES back in the day, known as a bit of a black sheep for the series, because it just changed so much. It had like a world map with mobs and like free roaming dungeons. It was very strange. And did not have the weapons triangle yet at that time. And it, it was lacking a few other things. And so it was an interesting choice by Nintendo to remake Shadows of Valentia.
Yeah,
and
it was.
When they were like, people were going, oh, it's very different. Like, I knew, I kind of knew that it was different, but I didn't really realize how different it was until I started playing it. It is so different, Nadia.
Yeah, it it looks completely different. Although I will say, just going off track for a second, I love the art on the card. It's like little two little sprites, which I guess kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's very old school, right?
Yeah.
It actually, it's kind of the definition of old school Fire Emblem.
Right.
From the art to kind of the gameplay, the way the supports work, where instead of, you know, having them meet up in between and have their conversations there, like they have them on the field if they spend enough time next
totally
to
old
another.
School.
Yeah, definitely. And you can't link them together. Like, you can't have them actually join up together, which is also another big difference that literally just occurred to me, actually. Well, that makes a big difference, right? Like, the fact that you can't actually put them into one. And so in that regard, it makes it feel like kind of an old-school Fire Emblem. Well, one thing that does not make it feel like an old-school Fire Emblem for me is the fact that I'm playing it on casual mode.
Right. That's surprising for me. Did you, didn't you say you were going to avoid casual mode? Or?
Yeah, because I am a classic mode snob. Like, I always have been. Like, going back to, you know, the original GBA versions, because that's just what I was used to. I was used to death mode. But for some reason, just going into this one, I'm like, I think I burned out a little bit on Fates.
Oh, okay. That would make sense, actually. So, so how are you doing on casual? Or do you feel ashamed, or are you okay?
A little, because I can kind of brute force through a lot of things. So there's a moment in Act 2 where you see an island, and I'm pretty sure that island is optional. And there is a pretty hard enemy on it. And that enemy was kind of kicking my ass a little bit. But he only took out one party member, and I was able to brute force it and take it down. And it was just like, oh, okay. That, all right, fine. Whereas I think I wouldn't have been able to easily beat it on classic mode, because I wouldn't have wanted to lose anybody. So I think that's just one immediate difference, is that I'm a little more cavalier with how I use my characters, as long as I don't lose my main character. And actually, because if you lose your main character, it's game over.
Yeah, the same old, same old.
But you have this handy turn wheel thing, which will let you rewind time if you make a mistake.
Right, that's right.
So, like, if they die, like, you can just go, whoop.
You're back to life. I am Jesus.
Yes, exactly. So, though, they only have a certain number of charges, so you have to get, like, cogs to, like, charge it up and everything. But playing on casual mode, I like, no, I'm, like, I actually am enjoying it maybe more than in the past, because I've, on classic mode, I was always having to restart all the time.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
And that's why I burned out.
Right. So does it feel like a Famicom game with a 3D skin, or does it feel like something worthy of the 3DS?
Oh, no, it totally feels worthy of the 3DS.
Okay.
Now, I'm not super up on, like, what exactly it changes, but it sure does feel modern, which I think is important in the sense of, like, when you're in a dungeon, like, it's fully 3D and your character actually looks really good. And there's this cool little bit where, like, it has text, like, appear on the screen that is, like, establishing, like, the atmosphere of everything.
Oh, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah. I like it. No, it actually does it. It's, like, it's a very low, kind of an analog way, I guess, of establishing a mood, but it works.
It works. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, no, I like it. It feels like a Persona dungeon.
Mm-hmm, which isn't so bad. Well, it depends which Persona you're talking about, I guess.
Yes, exactly. Maybe like Persona 4, in the sense that there are enemies running around, you hit the enemy, and you go into a fight.
Okay.
So. And I thought it was going to be really annoying, but it's kind of like Fire Emblem Heroes. Like, you just, like, roll through those battles really fast.
That's good. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
How are the characters? Are you engaged with them, or are they just kind of fodder? Well, you saved them, so I'm guessing that they must mean something to you.
I mean, so far they're okay. Like, there's nothing, like, that's really standing out to me outside of the two main characters, Alm and Celica.
I don't know how to pronounce your name. Celica, I think it is. I keep saying Cecilia.
The fact that I know what her name is, like, is probably telling.
There, that's a point. You know her name. Woo!
No, like, there are often times where, like, if I don't know a character's name on a show or a game, like, that tells me that, like, I'm not invested in that character.
And hey, it's Guy with anime hair. How you doing?
Yeah, anime guy. Yeah. And at least in the early going, like, they're split up, so they have their own armies.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they're going to come back together or anything, but so I guess that's given me an opportunity to kind of learn about them individually.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm liking the story well enough so far. So it's basically like two kids who are raised by this old knight. Mm-hmm. And there's like an empire. And when the kids, at some point, the boy and the girl, they get split up. And she like is taken away far away. And Alm is like training to be a warrior so that he can leave the village and like go find her, maybe. I don't know.
Something like that.
And he gets to the point where he's strong enough and he hooks up with a rebellion against an empire, which is a common Fire Emblem trope.
Of course.
And, like, starts leading that empire. So this is where the differences start to come into play, okay? Instead of... So you played Fates, if I recall correctly. You were playing Birthright?
I haven't played Fates or Birthright yet.
Really?
No.
I thought you had played it for some reason. You played Awakening.
Yes. Awakening, I loved.
Yeah, you've totally played Awakening. So, as you'll probably recall, in Awakening, you had the random encounters, but you also had the... sorry, my cat is, like, literally walking across the screen.
He has opinions about a Fire Emblem. Oh, that is so cute. I'm sorry.
Yes.
It's so terrible to talk about while he can't see, but he's just, like, head-butting cat while she's trying to talk about Fire Emblem.
Yes, he is. But I digress. So, as you'll recall, in Fire Emblem Awakening, you will be going... It's going by chapter by chapter, and each chapter is its own map, right?
Right.
Its own bespoke map. And then you can also have kind of random encounters.
Yes.
Where, like, randomized encounters where you can level yourself up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Awakening, and that's a lot of Fire Emblems, actually. Like, you have these bespoke maps, chapter by chapter. Maybe you have, like, kind of a hub area in between where, like, you can sort things out.
Mm-hmm.
In this one, you leave a village, you're looking at an overhead world map with a bunch of enemies on it down a road. And you walk down the road, which is, like, a straightforward path, almost like Super Mario Brothers 3.
Huh.
And you walk into an enemy encounter. And you see some enemies on a small map,
Wow.
And you fight them.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I like that.
Yeah, it's very different. So instead of like these really long kind of bespoke maps, you have much quicker fire encounters.
Yeah, I actually wonder if maybe Nintendo released this particular game because it was so different, and like they're worried about maybe people thinking Fire Emblem is just more of the same over and over again. So they're like, oh, yeah?
I mean, it is. I mean, it's not. I mean, it has different stories and everything. But for the most part, it's followed a particular formula over the years. So this one, like, it's just so different.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that they picked the Echo's name because they wanted to start doing remakes and stuff.
Yeah, I think we talked about that last time. And I was saying how both of us were saying we'd really love to see a remake of, what is it, Genealogy of the Holy War.
Yeah.
So I'm totally down with the idea of some remakes of the old titles.
Yeah, the ones that never came out here.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And there's a lot.
So each chapter is you're going down the world map, you're fighting enemies on these kind of smaller quick hit maps, a little bit like Fire Emblem Heroes. There are towns that you can stop by in, mm-hmm. and when you're in a town, there's a first-person perspective.
Oh, that's interesting.
That you can point and click on things, and that's how you can, like, get items like food. Like, food is a thing.
Food on the ground. Click on food.
Weapons. You talk to people. That's where you can recruit people.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I really screwed up initially, as I was talking about in my article, because I didn't recruit everybody. I wasn't even, like, thinking about talking to everybody in the village. And so I missed on two characters.
Oh. Is it the number one rule of RPGs? Talk to everybody twice. And you broke it.
Yeah, well, I wasn't even thinking in those terms of Fire Emblem, because you don't do that in Fire Emblem.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So I was, like, really, like, completely thrown by that. And I was having a super hard time against an enemy that had, like, this leather shield. And, like, I was just, like, bouncing off it. I could not beat it. And then finally I brute forced it, took him down. He killed, like, my entire party, but I was able to get him.
Oh, wow.
Because casual mode.
Of course.
And I went back to the village, and there were the people that I should have recruited. I was like, oh.
And were they just, like, glaring at you, like, you idiot? We were right here the whole time.
Just a little bit. So, that is an interesting aspect that I think adds a lot of atmosphere, maybe, to Shadows of Valentia. And I kind of like it, actually. I like that feature. And then there are the dungeons.
Of course.
Which I already told you about, which are also along the paths. And so you're going down this path, exploring the dungeons, stopping into towns. And then at the end of the road, that's kind of like the next story bits are coming up.
Right.
Yeah. So, but there are story bits in between the battles as well, but...
When you said the end of the road, I started thinking of some Boys to Men Fire Emblem theme song.
Never listened to Boys to Men, actually.
It might be a little bit past your time, or before your time.
No, Boys to Men was totally in my time.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, that was like when I was like in sixth grade.
Oh, it was our grade 8 graduation song, so.
Like, ugh. But I didn't listen to the teeny boppy, like, kind of stuff. Like, wasn't there Salt and Peppa? Like, wasn't that a thing in like the early 90s as well?
Oh, God, yes.
Oh my gosh, like all my friends totally into it, and I was just like, do not understand. I'm gonna listen to my video game music on my tape recorder now.
You're ahead of your time, Kat.
I totally was. Apparently I told my parents that I was going to review video game music when I got older, when I was like 11, and they were like, ha ha, nobody could turn that into a career.
How many times have I heard that in my life?
So, Fire Emblem Shadows of Valentia, I think the only concern that I have at this point in the game, admittedly it's still early, is that it's going to get too repetitive. Because, like, in Conquest, in Birthright, in Awakening, you had maps that were quite a bit, I would say, more elaborate.
Right.
And interesting. Here, they're really straightforward. Like, you have some terrain features. Like, in Act 2, you're, like, on a boat. And you're, like, riding around on the boat. And, like, you're fighting an enemy. And, like, their boat is on the top. Your boat is on the bottom. There are two planks connecting the two. And they're, like, coming at you. And you kill them really fast. And that's the end of the encounter. So I could totally see that becoming, like, really kind of, like, boring.
Right. Do you know how long the game is, by any chance?
Nope, no idea. But if it's anything like your average Fire Emblem, it's going to be like 25, 30 hours.
Yeah, that sounds
about
right.
Maybe a little less. Yeah, so, I mean, I'm enjoying it. It has a different flavor to it so far. So.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I definitely want to give it a try. I'll probably get around to that before I get around to the other ones, Fates and Birthright and whatnot.
That's what I was going to ask, is like, you are not a hardcore Fire Emblem fan. Like,
no,
I
enjoy them. I played several on the GBA, and I played, of course, Awakening, and I would very much like to play Birthright, Conquest, etc. But I guess I'm a little intimidated by doing three games all in one swoop. So that's why I haven't gotten around to it.
Oh my gosh. Like I said, I totally burned out on it playing Birthright, just because I got to a certain point and like the maps were taking so long.
Yeah.
That it was just, and then inevitably like a Pegasus Rider or something would show up and take out my cleric, and I'd be like,
ooh,
God.
No, thank you.
Made me so mad. Like, I liked Conquest a lot better than Birthright.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say that much. Though I think I liked the characters better than Birthright, all told. But I really want to play Revelation, but I'm not going to do that until I beat both of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know when I'm going to beat. I'm not sure when I'm going to beat it. So, but I was going to ask, it's like somebody who's kind of the newer kind of form of Fire Emblem fan, who's somebody who came in on Awakening, like, what are your thoughts on Shadows of Valentia? Like, is this something that sounds appealing to you? Is the fact that they get rid of, like, marriage and stuff, like, kind of a deal breaker? I'm curious.
Oh, definitely not a deal breaker. I am definitely interested in Shadows of Valentia, and I very likely will give it a try. Because I'm not totally anti-old school Fire Emblem. My first one was Fire Emblem for the Game Boy, and I enjoyed that very much. And I think, what was the other one? The one with Lin. The Sacred Stones, that's what I'm thinking of.
Sacred Stones, gotcha,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, so that one I played, and I enjoyed that too. You know, I'll definitely give it a try, because even before marriage, there were still interesting character interactions, there was still a good story. The gameplay is very satisfying. It's just enough strategy for me. I get very intimidated with real-time strategy, but I'm okay with turn-based. So yeah, I can deal with it.
Okay, that's interesting. I think the fact that it has casual mode still is like, something that will draw people in.
Exactly. I'll probably be using that, frankly.
So much of Fire Emblem has become about like the waifu thing, though, that I was just kind of wondering.
No, that is something I enjoy, but it's not a deal breaker for me. I can't speak for everyone, though.
All right. Shadows of Valentia is going to be out next week. I believe the release date is May 19th.
Mm-hmm.
And I will have my review up on May 16th. So you can look forward to that.
I do.
And we're going to probably maybe have a slightly longer discussion, or maybe about the same amount next week, where we will cover it without spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right. Let's move on to the next topic, Nadia. All right, so I'm just going to preface this. Normally, I don't care about... normally, I do not care about lists, all right? Like, people have their own opinions. Sometimes they are the wrong opinions. Whatever. But I saw Game Informer's list, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there are a few things that jumped out at me about it. One of them was that... Kingdom Hearts 2 in the top 25.
Ew.
I'm thinking that this is kind of not the right answer. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people who are like totally into it. I'm not.
Yeah.
It's been interesting because I was talking to Katie and she was just like, oh yeah, like I feel like everybody has a Kingdom Hearts phase when they're growing up. I'm like, yeah, Kingdom Hearts phase when growing up, sure. But she's like, yeah, and I played that game so many times, but yeah, like Kingdom Hearts 2, you know, you're just like hitting one button the entire game and then you finish it, the end. All right, so Suikoden 2 is like number 29.
I'm sorry, that's a number that's not...
Too low.
As high, I'm thinking, okay, I'm just a sputtering outrage here, I'm sorry.
All right, here are the top 10.
So
are
you're saying that Kingdom Hearts 2 ranks higher than Suikoden 2?
Yes. Kingdom Hearts 2 is number 25, and Suikoden 2 is number 29.
Yeah.
All right, here are
the
top
10. Apocalypse now.
Here are the top 10. Final Fantasy Tactics is number 10.
Okay, I can deal with that.
Baldur's Gate 2, number 9.
Okay.
Baldur's Gate 2 ranked pretty highly on both the IGN list and the Game Informer list. Diablo 2, number 8. That's an interesting decision.
That is an interesting decision.
I could see that being in the top 10, though.
Yeah, I can accept that.
Lots of staying power. KOTOR, number 7.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bad choice, actually. World of Warcraft, number 6. I mean, it's certainly influential and probably one of the I think it's actually one of the best MMOs ever made.
Oh, absolutely.
Which MMO heads are going to go like crazy on me because they're like, filthy casuals, MMO, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, World of Warcraft is so influential for
it
a
is.
Reason. Like,
no, absolutely. Yeah. But I would also argue it hasn't aged as well as it could have, but I'm not a huge World of Warcraft fan, so I can't say for sure.
I'm always a little hazy on where MMOs should go on this list.
Yeah.
People have like strong opinions about MMOs just as a matter of course, right?
Of course.
Like, just, yeah. Number five is Witcher 3.
Okay, I do want to play that.
Number four is Mass Effect 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mass Effect 2. Yeah, because Mass Effect 2, that's a shooter. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Now, we were having like a big discussion about this a few episodes ago, and I was pitching the fact that Mass Effect 2 has some really memorable levels and some really memorable role-playing aspects to it.
Absolutely.
But it strips down so much of the RPG stuff from Mass Effect that it's just like, oh, I don't know, top five? Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
Yeah.
That's a tough sell for me.
Controversial.
Number three is Chrono Trigger.
Okay. Okay.
Number two is Final Fantasy VI.
Okay.
I would quibble with that. I would say that
it's really interchangeable. Depends who you ask.
And number one is Skyrim.
Wet fart.
Skyrim.
Okay, I love
Let me
Skyrim,
say that again.
But it is not the best.
Skyrim.
Yeah.
All
Skyrim
right,
is a game where I once was walking through the woods and I saw a horse staring at me and I said, oh my god, what is the deal with this horse? And I went up to the horse. It was a hollow model. I walked inside this model and it was just like frozen in this eternal scream, and it was the most horrible thing I'd ever seen in my life. And this is only just one of like 50 billion glitches I could regale you with over the years. But yeah, Skyrim, as much as I adore it, it is not a well-constructed game. It has its strengths, absolutely.
I mean, I've always kind of maybe made excuses for Skyrim because it's so big.
It's very, very influential.
And making sandbox games like that
exactly.
is hard.
Oh, yeah.
Insanely so that I almost give them a free pass a little bit for the bugs because it's just like,
there's
good
a
luck
few
bug
too
testing
many.
Literally everything in this game, okay?
Yeah.
But, okay.
But
so,
Nintendo just made a much bigger game that has very few notable bugs in it. You know what I mean? So it can be done.
Yeah. It can be done, yes. So, Skyrim. I just felt compelled to write a rebuttal because I was just like, a game's flaw to Skyrim just can't be number one. I'm sorry. Like, there's no such thing as a perfect list, but there is such a thing as a wrong list.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the AFI, like, Institute put Scream 6 as the number one best movie of all time, we would say that is an incorrect choice.
Yes.
If they said that The Avengers, which is kind of what this is the equivalent of picking The Avengers as the best movie of all time, or the best whatever, that's maybe the wrong choice. Like, The Avengers is not the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
Contrary to what some fanboys might be telling you. It's like, I had to say, like, as an RPG fan, Skyrim, I actually love it. I love Skyrim.
Yeah, yeah.
I have had a lot of very memorable experiences playing Skyrim and Fallout 4 for that matter. I've always said that the story has not mattered as much to me as kind of the feeling of being on a holodeck.
Mm-hmm.
But the story is too flawed.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they railroad you into choosing a faction.
Yes,
that's
that
flawed.
Sucks.
That's a huge, huge flaw. That's practically unforgivable.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it is. And the combat. The combat is not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just
so
kind of like...
from a systems perspective and a story perspective, it just can't be number one. I'm sorry.
What would you rank as number one?
Probably Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, I'd probably go with Final Fantasy VI or Chrono Trigger.
I mean, I wouldn't pick Final Fantasy VI. I think it's one of the best RPGs, but from a system standpoint, it's maybe a little too flawed, and it's also pretty buggy. So.
It is very buggy, and I will say, I think your opinion of Chrono Trigger counts as probably more than anyone's, because you are playing the game for the first time. You don't have the nostalgia glasses on.
So it's really blown me away, and
exactly.
It's been incredible how well it's held up.
Exactly.
I would have to do some more thinking to think about what my actual number one choice is. Like, the RPG genre is such a rich, rich genre mm-hmm. that, like, you honestly, there are a lot of really viable options for number one. But yeah. I certainly would not put Skyrim there.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah. Like, you pick Skyrim, like, the choices aren't as meaningful as they could be. Mm-hmm. It's way too easy to become overpowered. Like,
oh, yeah.
Have both a fire abilities, and you can effectively wield a sword. Mm-hmm. Like, you can be an all-rounder without any trouble whatsoever.
Pretty much, and the shouts and everything.
Yeah, and the shouts.
Oh, you can turn into a werewolf and a vampire and both.
I mean, yeah, it's a power fantasy, right? Like, you're like, oh, I'm going to marry a werewolf, and I'm going to be a vampire, and I'm going to have my own house. Na-na-na, right? So it's pretty rad in that regard.
Yeah,
it's the Assassin's
game.
Guild side quest is awesome.
The which side quest?
The Assassin's Guild one.
Oh, that was great. I love that.
Yeah, no, that's a phenomenal side quest. And here's what was surprising, but like at the end of the day, I was just like, it's too flawed. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
It has staying power. It's clearly resonated with people. But...
Yeah, although I will say now that this list has come out and you know people have understandably written rebuttals like yours, people are saying, oh, the game was never good. No, it is still a good game. It is still very worthy of
sure.
its recognition and its adoration, but it's just not the number one RPG of all time.
I think that it is... I love how big the world is,
yeah.
and I love how vibrant and alive it feels, and
yeah.
I liked that I never really like ran out of things to do in it, and I think the dragons add a lot.
The dragons are great, although,
but I just nah. Here's what stood out to me: the passions that it evoked. Skyrim evokes a lot of passion.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people, Nadia. Like,
yeah.
You should have seen the comments.
I've seen them. There's a torrent last time I saw.
Here's what surprised me. There were the people who were like, this game is garbage.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not.
There are the people who were like, this game is garbage. And there are the people who said, this game, no, you're wrong, Kat. This game is the best game ever made. Like... You're just jealous, and you're a Witcher 3 fangirl. And I'm like, what?
I thought you didn't like it so much.
Apparently, I'm a Witcher 3 fangirl now. And they're like, no, you're a Witcher 3 fangirl. Skyrim is the best. I did not realize that there was a Witcher 3 Skyrim rivalry going on here.
There's like an everything rivalry. It's crazy how it works. But
why do you have to pick one or the other?
I don't know. Why was there a rivalry with Horizon Zero Dawn and Breath of the Wild?
Because I guess they were both open world, and it was like two separate platforms. Like, they were console exclusives on two separate platforms, whereas, like, Skyrim and Witcher 3 were on multiple platforms.
Mm-hmm. People got to check their sides.
They were platform agnostic for the most part. So, yeah, I don't really get it. I think it's just because they're both highly lauded and have their own fans, and so there's inevitably going to be... there's going to inevitably be rivalries. But, like, some of the comments... You're right, Skyrim is not the best of all RPG of all time. It's not a patch on its predecessors, to be honest. But it's far, far superior to Witcher 3. I'm like, really? Oh, I mean, okay. Sure. Yeah. Whatever. But then we had the next one down. The Elder Scrolls games are not good at anything. Not one thing.
Oh, my God.
The stories suck. The combat sucks. The writing is dull. The graphics are subpar. There's no balance. The character progression systems are broken. The weapons are boring. Movement is floaty. The NPCs in this dynamic sandbox have zero personality. They don't do anything, etc., etc., etc.
Wow. Tell us how you
really
feel.
They get by on quantity, and that's it. To name one of these games the best of anything is like calling McDonald's the best restaurant in the world because there are more of them than anything else.
I kind of like McDonald's. It is not the best restaurant in the world. I still like McDonald's.
Like I said, inspires really strong opinions, and it has hell of a modding community.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm totally like, am I like completely undermining my argument against it being the best RPG of all time?
I don't think so, because I see where you're coming from. It's a great game, it's very influential, but it just, if it was like a little less flawed, if it was a little more polished, maybe I'd consider it, but it's not, let's face it.
Anyway, so this just stood out to me. Now, IGN, interestingly enough, they also did their list. You know what they picked as number one?
What's that?
Chrono Trigger.
Okay, well, now we have the sensible choice.
Okay, so can I just say, though, I don't think you can have a top 10 without Suikoden 2 or Persona 4.
Yeah, that's bullshit. So was Persona 4 not in either of their top 10s?
No, not even close.
Wow, really?
Yeah, can you believe that? That's crazy.
No, what about, I guess 5 is probably too early to put on any top.
Oh yeah, it's way too early.
Yeah.
For sure. So, I mean, I have said that I consider Persona 4 the best and most influential JRPG of the past 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Name a better one. Fight me.
No, yeah, I agree. It should be on there.
IGN, their top 10 was Witcher 3, mm-hmm. Vagrant Story, Diablo 2.
Vagrant Story.
This is very similar. Vagrant Story, that's a weird choice.
It really is.
Secret of Mana, Planescape Torment, good choice.
Mm-hmm.
World of Warcraft, Pokemon Yellow. Pokemon Yellow?
Yellow? What the f- What, the F word?
Because the... Okay, first of all, Pokemon Red, Blue, and Yellow are not even the best Pokemon games, okay? It's just the ones that everybody remembers the best. Black 2 and White 2 is easily the best Pokemon game
I vote for
made.
Sun and Moon, but that's just me.
Baldur's Gate 2 at number 3, Final Fantasy 6, Chrono Trigger. Persona 4 came in at number 13.
Oh, Did you say Persona 4? Okay, yeah, yeah.
That's what I meant. Persona 4, Golden, 13, and Dark Souls at number 12. And they put Mass Effect 2 over Dark Souls. I'm throwing my phone across the room.
She'll
no,
do it,
I'm
folks.
Not gonna. I do not accept. Do not accept. I'm sorry. Dark Souls is one of the best games ever made. It is such a deep and beautiful and complex and interesting game. We named it number one on our top 15 games since 2000 list for a reason.
Exactly.
Dark Souls is a Michelin star restaurant of games, okay? There's a reason that people are so obsessed and fanatical with this series.
There's a reason why Don't Compare It to Dark Souls is a meme, because everyone was comparing everything to Dark Souls for like a year.
Exactly. I'm sorry, Mass Effect 2 ranked too high, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Mass Effect 2, it's a great game. It is not top 10 anything for RPGs. I'm sorry.
Especially
bite
not
me.
Above Persona 4 or Suikoden 2. Hey, people. You're going to have to admit this injustice.
I'm done getting
mad at video games.
That's my list passion for now.
Passion of the list.
But my list passion is past. I'm sure you have opinions. And I'm referring to you, the audience. And if you want to talk about your favorite RPGs or what you consider to be the best RPGs, then you should send us an email at usgamer@usgamer.net or drop us a line on social media at usgamernet or on Facebook, or just comment on the show notes, which will be on the main site. But in the meantime, Nadia, let's go meet the new guy.
Yay! New dude.
All right, we have a third member of our podcast now, and that is Matt Kim, our new news editor, who joined us on Monday. And Matt, he enjoys his RPGs. Matt, what are some of your favorite RPGs? Go.
Hi, I like Dark Souls games, and I like Personas, both of which are super popular now, so I'm pretty happy.
Welcome!
Yeah. You're accepted.
Right in. All right, Matt, what are your history with RPGs? Like, really quickly, like, how did you kind of discover the genre? And, like, what's your own little personal history with it?
Well, I guess the first RPG I played technically was Pokemon.
Nice.
Yeah, so I didn't realize that was, like, a proper JRPG until I discovered, like, more games. But then when I finally, like, sat down to play, like, a Final Fantasy or a Dragon Quest, I realized I actually didn't like those as much. Like, I kind of thought that the clicking and the magic spell casting and stuff like that was kind of boring for my young attention span.
Okay, that's fair.
Brain.
yeah, sure.
But then you play those for the stories, and that's makes up for it. But it took me a while to appreciate that. But
yeah, I know what you mean. It took me quite a while to get to the point where I could like properly appreciate an RPG, as I've talked about in the past on this podcast. But so did you ever turn the corner on Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy, or are you still not much of a fan?
Nope. I tried Final Fantasy 13. I couldn't get into it. I got into 14 for a couple months, actually. And that was a big surprise for me, because I'm also not an MMORPG guy, but like Final Fantasy 14, I played probably longer than any other MMO I have. a long time. But then I didn't pick up the expansion, and so I kind of just like dropped off again. But hopefully I wanna pick up the new one, the Stormblood. So hopefully when that comes out, I'll be back on.
What is it about 14 that speaks to you? Because I'm not much of an MMO RPG person myself. And like, I'm sitting here going, yep, it's an MMO, all right. Like, I'm killing rats and like, I'm running around a world that looks pretty good, but everybody's doing MMO things. So I'm just really curious, like, what about Final Fantasy 14 in particular grabbed you, especially given that, I mean, you don't even really like Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I don't know. I was pretty surprised too. It was, I think, one of the prettier MMORPGs I've ever played. Like, I mean,
definitely.
I was aware of Warcraft and games like that, but I think on like a like artistic level, Final Fantasy 14 has like very little competition. Like, I remember booting it up. I think I joined in a Realm Reborn, so after the big reboot, and I just like remember being like taken away by like how gorgeous everything looked, even like on my pretty like mid-tier gaming laptop. So I was pretty excited to jump in. Also, a bunch of my friends were playing at the time, and I think that's like kind of mandatory for any MMORPG, you know, when if you have buds to play with.
Yeah, having a group of friends that you can actually get into is like really nice.
Yeah, and I think for some reason it kind of just like reminded me of like if like you see MMOs in like anime and you're kind of like, oh, too bad real MMOs don't look like that, but Final Fantasy 14 kind of did, and so I think that's also like a big part of it. But it was mostly just, I guess, timing and luck and really gorgeous looks.
Fair enough. All right, Matt, I know that you are on the Nier Automata bandwagon with Katie.
Yes.
I seem to recall you saying Game of the Year 2017 in our Slack channel. So make your pitch for it as Game of the Year.
Well, I mean,
no pressure.
I think anybody who's played it has like a weird realization that like this game that like kind of people made fun of for being like another one of those like Japanese waifu simulators, you know, with like a attractive anime heroine, was kind of taken aback by how deep the storyline is, and like, I don't know, personally I teared up at the end after like playing through it five times, you know, which is like this really deep humanist message about what it means to be a person and getting along and like anti-war, and it was really oddly moving, especially with all the news that's happening these days.
Yeah, it's definitely a game I want to play after I'm done with Persona 5, I think.
Yeah, and it helps that Platinum helped like refine the combat, because I did play the original Nier on the PS3 and the Xbox, and those, like, I tried my best, but it's just a real hard slog to get through because it controls so poorly, and so the polish definitely helped.
Do you need to play the other Nier games to really appreciate Automata?
Not really. I mean, I've got through about halfway through the first Nier, and it's like the themes of like Yoko Taro's like main themes of being really incredibly sad and hopeful is probably the only thing that the two games share. I mean, there is an underlying like story, because they're all like based on the Drakengard games,
which I know a little bit about, but I'm not
This huge mythos, but I mean I got through just fine without it. It stands alone pretty solidly.
All right, that was the same with Drakengard 3, to be honest, which it told a totally different story from the first Drakengard. I didn't play Drakengard 2, so I can't really speak to it, but I'm pretty sure that there's, as Matt was saying, an overarching like kind of universe or arc, but I mean, I think every game pretty much ends with the universe being destroyed anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
Reboot.
Taro Yoko is kind of a nihilist, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Really interesting guy in person, actually. But so I have a number of friends who are playing Nier Automata right now, Matt, and I've been told that the opening level is amazing and like one of the best opening levels that they've seen. Like, what are your thoughts? Do you agree with that?
I mean, I don't know. Like, what stands out to me is how the game ended, actually. And, you know, the game makes you play the opening level, like, three times in a like, because each you have to replay the whole game five times if you want to see, like, the true ending. So, to be honest, I was kind of, like, tired of playing the same opening, because that was, like, I think the one thing that kind of carried over each playthrough, but yeah, it was really good. It was big, and I think it's, if you played the demo, I think it's a good chunk of the demo is also the opening. So if you played the demo, then you got a good idea of how fun and what kind of like tone the opening sets.
I'm totally getting Live, Die, Repeat, Edge of Tomorrow like vibes out of this, like, because of course that's the Tom Cruise movie where he's basically living Groundhog's Day, but he's going through the same D-Day like invasion every time.
It's a Groundhog Day extreme.
And he has to, like, initially, like, it's a really scary battle, and like it's really intense, but then, you know, every time he dies, it gets revived and he has to redo it. And that there's a certain point by like the middle of the movie where he's just like, yeah, okay, get through the battle, just shoot the people, save the guy. All right, here's the thing. Okay, I'm just trying to get a little bit further. Live, Die, Repeat is the movie that has no save checkpoints. Poor Tom Cruise. It's a commentary on video game meta. Did you ever see Live, Die, Repeat, Matt?
Yeah, I actually really dug it. I was bummed that it didn't do that well, but I thought it was thought it was hilarious.
It had a really dark sense of humor.
Yeah, I think that montage when Tom Cruise just kept dying over and over again was.
Yeah, he totally just made the perfect, excellent. All right, Matt, what do you look for in an RPG? Do you like look for kind of good systems? Do you look for like good story? Like, what are you looking for?
I think a lot of the like RPG systems have always kind of bored me. Like, even in my favorite RPGs like Dark Souls, I've never been a huge fan of like stats and things like that. So I guess the only thing that ever like puts me through, gets me to like finish an RPG is through good story or good world or more narrative and visual based than like combat mechanics or anything like that.
So you're thinking more in terms of just like narrative and storytelling and that kind of thing than actual mechanics. But so it seems like you're almost more like genre agnostic. As long as it tells a good story and has a compelling world, like you're fine with it. Like you're not drawn in particular to RPGs.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's my big thing about most video games is I'm willing to try out most things as long as there's like some sort of central narrative or visual hook that gets me.
I understand that.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of the big thing with RPGs in particular, because I think if it like prides itself on having a complicated system, I might just get bored of it if it doesn't have anything to back it up.
Yeah.
I don't know. If it has a complicated system,
here comes
Cat's
counterpoint.
Like, that can be enough substance for me, to be perfectly honest. I think a good story really helps, but I spend so much time just obsessing over how I'm going to compose my party and like build up my characters that in itself is a story for me. So, and if it doesn't have good systems, like it better have an amazing story to keep me engaged is what I'm saying. So would you say Dark Souls is your favorite RPG?
Yeah, probably my number one. Yeah, without contest. I mean, let's just leave it at that. It's pretty much my tops.
Yeah, we were just arguing about that. We're not arguing so much as ranting about it a little bit. And by we, I mean me. because on the... So IGN and Game Informer were doing their top 100 RPGs. And IGN, I think, had it Dark Souls at like number 13, and I don't even know where Game Informer had Dark Souls, and I was just like going, how can you put Mass Effect 2 ahead of Dark Souls? It does not compute. I'm sorry. It does not.
It's a sin.
And so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to put together our own top 100 list, Nadia.
I guess this is a job we have to do. We just have to service the world as we always do.
Blood God approved.
Believe in this list and you shall be saved.
All right, Matt, what are you doing for the site these days? Like, can you tell us a little bit about what you're bringing to US Gamer?
Well, I'm happy to join US Gamer. I'm excited to unearth the stories that needs to be unearthed for the sake of video game journalism, which I think is at a real turning point. I feel like feel like it's we've turned the page and we're taking video game journalism seriously, and I'd like to help both promote that and like push that forward and improve myself. So, and I think that's my big goal for as part of US Gamers, as a US Gamers news editor.
Yeah, so far you've been pretty great. Good work.
I think that's an admirable goal for sure.
Definitely.
And US Gamer has always maybe like taken a more serious minded approach, I think. Well, with a heavy dose of quirkiness. And
today nerdiness. I wrote about spiders inside of games.
I saw that. That's an actual nightmare of mine that I just opened up a new game and there's just a big tarantula in it.
All right. Matt, welcome aboard.
Thank you. We'll talk to you again soon. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Okay, we're back, and we're just going to wrap up really quickly. From comments from the previous episode, people had plenty of things to say about the fact that Narahi bought the After Years 3 times. And weirdly enough, like, there are actually plenty of people who agreed with you. James Todd 15 said, only 3 times? Poof. I haven't even played half of it, and I own 4 versions.
Whoa, now that's hardcore. I'm trying to think, okay, you'd have the Wii version, you'd have PSP, you'd have probably iOS, and probably, yeah, Steam. That could be done.
Victor Hunter says, as an After Years apologist, I stand in solidarity with Nadia. There are so many good parts that I get wrapped in a horribly unfound package. I'll be damned if Luca, Kalka, and Brina aren't some of my favorite characters in the 4 universe. I also adore the final dungeon and boss.
Yeah.
I swear I will move back to Toronto if it means I ever get to talk to someone about After Years again.
I think we talked about it once. We got together for lunch and we were talking about like Final Fantasy. He's my Final Fantasy 4 buddy. We talk about that whenever we get together, but he had to go back to Vancouver. BC, rather.
We also talked about Trails in the Sky and Morrowind. Satellite of Love has things to say about the Trails series. He says that the thing that he likes to talk about Trails is how it's wheels within wheels. What I mean by this is there are short-term plot beats, chapter-wide beats, game-wide beats, arc-wide beats, and series-wide beats for both plot and characterization. Multiple layers of these are ticking over in both the foreground and background throughout these games, providing a ton of fun to soak oneself in, or if you don't want to go deep into the world building, skimming the surface can suffice. It's really neat that way. So when you get the third being an epilogue, it's more than that. We're seeing some beloved, realistic, and larger-than-life characters again, perhaps for the last time in this. But wait, there's more! We also get a self-contained story of Kevin Insensitive Jerk Graham. Plus, it behaves like a necessary bridge to the Crossbell games, as they had to set those up. Some call that recycling. I call that efficient. As we're getting some of that sweet, sweet writing and music instead of asset porn.
Okay, I can appreciate that.
I like that term, asset porn.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the only thing that you could ever put into video games.
Mm-hmm.
Dorchatis, hooray for Morrowind. I started with Daggerfall, but I'm definitely one of the people who thinks Morrowind is the best. The story and world building, anyway. Even at the time, the gameplay was clunky and weird, and it's only gotten more so since then. I hope the people making Skywind can pull it off, even if that means the best Morrowind mods, like less generic NPCs or Uvris Legacy, won't be compatible anymore.
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, that's a Morrowind mod that makes it more like Skyrim.
Yes,
graphics-wise, and I like that.
Link6616, I don't have... Don't worry, Nadia, I don't have After Years as much as you, but I still have it twice. I'm really amazed by how many people have it multiple times.
It's like I said, like on one of the pieces I wrote on my own site, it's like having a beer with old friends, even if those friends are like stabbing you in the hand every 10 minutes or so. It's just fun to hang around them. Just, you gotta ignore the abuse.
Did you ever see The World's End?
The World's End?
The movie by Edgar Wright?
No.
It's like, so in that movie, Simon Pegg plays a guy who was kind of like the annoying goth type, like over-the-top cool dude in high school, who never grew up, and is still doing that into his 40s.
Oh boy.
And like gets together with his old friends and like is totally mortifying them because they're like, oh man, I remember when we used to play this music in high school. Remember I made you that mixtape? Yeah, it's that. This is the mixtape. You're playing that mixtape? Oh yeah, totally. He's like wearing the same clothes and everything, but he's like balding. It's really cringy. It's great.
That sounds fantastic.
So my point is that that's basically the after years.
Mm-hmm. That sounds about right. Although everyone in the after years has grown up and had kids of their own, and still kind of gothy, though. I mean, Kane never friggin' stops.
All right. So if you want to have your comments read on the podcast, send us an email at usgamer@usgamer.net or drop us a line in the show notes. And we may read it, or follow us on social media. Acts of Blood God is US Gamer Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever podcasts are sold, Google Play. Mm-hmm. Do us a favor. Please rate and review this podcast because the Blood God, his gospel must be spread.
I agree.
So that people can properly appreciate RPGs, which are the best genre.
Mm-hmm.
At least in my humble opinion. See, next week I will be gone, mm-hmm. but I'm still going to try and find time to record a podcast. It's going to be tricky. So the podcast might be a bit late on Friday, but we'll make it happen, Nadia.
You're a true disciple.
I am. And plus, we have a little more Shadows of Valentia talk, and mm-hmm. we have lots of things to cover at any given time.
It's always something.
What's on your plate, Nadia?
I'm finishing Persona 4, and I'm playing Persona 5, and I really got to get the last... done. I got to get the last of Zelda done because I am pretty much at the end. But it's one of those games where you don't want to finish it because then it's over, and then you're sad. I know that makes no
sense. I've had multiple friends.
I can see you moving your eyes at me.
I've had multiple friends tell me that, actually, who are like going, "Yeah, no, like Breath of the Wild is like I am literally sad to have it end, and that's quite a special game for that's quite the special experience in a video game."
Yeah, although I will say that one thing that does help and is making me reconsider my position is DLC is coming, so I can keep on playing. Like I might even just finish the game, and then I'll go back and like finish up the rest of those shrines, etc. Once the DLC drops, and just do it in Tingle's outfit like an idiot.
I know. There are people who have finished Persona 5 twice now, and I'm like going, are you human?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that's possible. I guess it's possible somehow, but I don't understand how they're warping time. I'd like lessons, please.
I've been distracted by Persona... I've been distracted from Persona 5 by Shadows of Valentia and also Heroes of the Storm.
Really?
Yeah, I can't stop playing Heroes of the Storm. Since it came back with Heroes 2.0, I started it up again, and like I just... periodically gets sucked into it, and the next thing I know it's been like 2 hours.
Have you seen that meme where like a little child is holding like his father's hand saying, "Father, why don't they love me?" It's like, "I don't know, little one, but it is of no concern. I will make them love you." It is about Google Plus, but people put on whatever they want for it. So one of the memes I saw was like Blizzard was the adult and Heroes of the Storm was a little child saying, "Why don't they love me, father? I don't know, little one, but I will make them love you."
You know, if you go to the Heroes of the Storm Reddit subreddit, the fans there are very defensive about Heroes of the Storm. Like, they are, like, they... Mm-hmm. Anytime anybody slags on it or, like, goes that Heroes of the Storm is garbage, they, like, get pissed off. Which is interesting, because if you go to, like, the Hearthstone community, all people do is complain about Hearthstone.
This game sucks and I can't stop playing it.
I mean, Dota 2 fans are also, like, similarly passionate. Mm-hmm. So to have that kind of passionate community probably says something, like, mm-hmm. that there's something to this game and that people are being unfairly dismissive. There was a Penny Arcade comic not too long ago, in which, I mean, it's Penny Arcade, whatever. And, like, they were taking shots at Heroes of the Storm, and they were going, uh-oh. Oh, yeah, like, I was losing, but it, like, took 45 minutes to lose. And I'm like, Heroes of the Storm games don't take that long. They take, like, 20 minutes max. That's why I get through them so fast. It's, like, literally, that's why I can't play any other MOBA, because I can't stand to take an hour to finish a game.
Mm-hmm.
But Heroes of the Storm done in 20 minutes. But, yeah, but it's unfortunately sucking away too much of my RPG time. And I got Shadows of Valentia sitting next to me, so.
Get back to work, Kat.
Get back to work. Play more video games. Play more video games. Okay. All right, everybody. We'll be back next week, as always. But until then, I've been Kat Bailey. And for Nadia, Matt, and myself, thanks for listening. Play more RPGs, and we'll see you again. Happy adventuring.